Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Lift the burden of getting a home loan with Rocket Mortgage and get a secure, transparent home loan approval in minutes. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. This week, a battle royal on healthcare, the Trump camp and Russia, terror in London, Neil Gorsuch. White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer said yesterday there is no plan B as the president pushed for a vote on healthcare.
There's plan A and plan A. We're going to get this done.
And so you're confident, 100% confident?
We're going to get it done. That's it, plain and simple.
Before the House Intelligence Committee, a public statement that still amazes from FBI Director James Comey.
The FBI is investigating the Russian government's efforts to interfere in the 2016 presidential election. And that includes investigating the nature of any links between individuals associated with the Trump campaign and the Russian government.
And President Trump's nominee to the Supreme Court, Judge Neil Gorsuch, says in confirmation hearings, the law above all.
Nobody is above the law in this country, and that includes the President of the United States.
This hour on Point, our weekly news roundtable with Michael Graham, Lisa Desjardins, and On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. What's at stake this week on American healthcare? And where are you on the Trump camp and Russia leaks, Judge Gorsuch? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Washington is Michael Graham, podcast editor for the Weekly Standard, also creative director for Media DC, home of the Weekly Standard and the Washington Examiner. Michael Graham, thanks for being with us today.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Tom.
And with us from Arlington, Virginia, is Lisa Desjardins, correspondent for the PBS NewsHour. Lisa, thank you so much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom. My pleasure.
With us from Hanover, New Hampshire, Jack Beatty. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, Michael, and Lisa.
Here was Paul Ryan last night coming out of that meeting with White House officials, said the vote on a replacement for the Affordable Care Act would happen today.
For 7.5 years, we have been promising the American people that we will repeal and replace this broken law because it's collapsing and it's failing families. And tomorrow we're proceeding.
Well, okay. Michael Graham, what is the division that we have seen on display this week within the Republican Party on the way forward on health care, Michael?
Well, some people think that the bill that Speaker Ryan and his team have cobbled together is lousy, but other Republicans think it's really lousy. And so they're trying to come together in some common area of lousiness that they can accept.
Okay. I mean, that's a big and broad, and it's been rough. We can see that. I mean, the president is supposed to be the master negotiator, Lisa, but this looked like, I mean, we'll see. We'll see. As of the hour we speak, we await to see what happens in Congress. But this was a big one, even for the negotiating president to bite off and chew.
This is a massive undertaking by any estimate, as Democrats found out themselves, not just under Barack Obama, but under Bill Clinton. And the idea that the Republican Congress and Republican president are trying to push through major sweeping changes to a fifth of the economy, which is what healthcare represents, in just 3 weeks, it hasn't even been 3 weeks since this bill was unveiled, is rather unprecedented, and it's certainly very aggressive, but the Republicans have found that doing that comes with some very large problems. And especially in a caucus, a conference like theirs that is so divided, what you have in this bill are sweeping changes to the Medicaid program that many Republicans like because they realize that all of our health care programs, Medicaid, Medicare, have very serious cost problems ahead. They're trying to bend those cost curves. But at the same time, we have a problem of disparity where there are kind of two Americas, and when you cut Medicaid, some Republicans like it, other Republicans realize it hurts people in their district. And that's been the back-and-forth balance that Speaker Ryan and the president have had to contend with this whole time. They do one thing that pleases conservatives, and it has alienated moderates. It's been a tricky balance, and in the end, speaking to you as of Friday morning, there are no votes from both groups, and it's not clear that this bill will pass.
George Stephanopoulos on ABC's Good Morning America, talking with White House Budget Director Mick Mulvaney today about the projected outcome of the health care vote, the big question.
Big question. Do you have the votes? Don't know. That's up to the House to count their own votes. The president made his final pitch last night, made it clear that we're all on the same page. The Republicans all want the same thing. They want to get rid of Obamacare and give people the control and the options that they want, the quality that they need, and the affordability they deserve. This is the chance today to deliver all of those things in the House.
Democrats saying no way, no how, not voting for this. Here was Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren talking with NPR's Morning Edition today.
We're looking at the plan they've put forward, and the plan they've put forward helps basically the millionaires and billionaires and kicks dirt in everybody else's face.
Jack Beatty, what have you seen unfold this week in this quite amazing debate and parliamentary congressional maneuvering around health care?
Well, for one thing, we've seen the policy incoherence of the Republican Party. They've had nearly 7 years, to prepare an alternative. And starting at the beginning, they said, we're going to do it better, and we have a better plan. They never came together on one, and now we see why, because of the insuperable obstacles that Lisa was just mentioning, the size of any such undertaking as this, but also the grave political risks. You know, only a poll today, Quinnipiac, shows only 17% of Americans like what they see in this bill, and that, according to someone else, some other poll, there isn't a congressional district in America where this, well, what people know of this, makes people like it in the majority. It is a terribly perilous vote for these Republicans, especially for the 23 of them who occupy districts carried by Hillary Clinton. And, you know, on the other side, well, we have a president, we have to oblige him, but the president is weak. He's at 39% in today's Gallup poll, unprecedentedly weak. Are they more afraid of him or their voters?
Michael Graham, what do you think the Trump White House and the congressional leadership of Paul Ryan have learned about one another in this back and forth, this negotiation this week, Michael?
I think that relationship is still unfolding because this, as Lisa pointed out, this is a massive bill and they start straight out of the gate. So I do a podcast for the Weekly Standard, Washington Examiner, the first 100 days podcast, and we're on day 64.
Yeah.
And that's how early this is. Mm-hmm. But I think we should also point out that because there is an incoherence in the policy, and I agree that that's one of the problems. How do you, in an elevator pitch, explain to a typical person the Republican approach will benefit you how? And when you're not doing legislation, when you're doing the tricks of reconciliation, when you don't have the 60-vote majority that Democrats had to pass Obamacare, and you're having to use this very narrow window, you can't – I don't think Republicans could get their coherent bill through because it would require legislation to pass. And people forget, even with the huge majorities President Obama had, and even with a year of campaigning, they passed with one vote. They had to do the Cornhusker kickback and the Louisiana buy-off, and then this the slaughter deemed as passed rule to get reconciliation through the House. This was going to be a mess no matter what, a three-week mess. I don't know if they have time to learn anything about each other, Tom, because they're basically in the trenches nonstop incoming fire.
Why try to do this in 3 weeks, Michael? I mean, the Affordable Care Act, it was a year more or less that was in process. Why this rush to do this right now?
You know, that's a great question. The argument that I hear from the White House and its supporters is that it's because you need this piece with the savings that you'll get from not spending the $1.1 trillion that you would spend under Obamacare in order to do the tax plan that they want. And maybe that's true. You know, it's, once again, it's the magic of Washington. I also think part of it is the kind of euphoria that Republicans had once they got the Trump, you know, a Republican in the White House, and they've been talking about repeal on the first day, that I think they kind of maybe drank some of their own Kool-Aid.
Lisa, at this hour, we don't know how this will unfold. Listeners will be hearing this show at different times, and we'll see perhaps more of the outcome here. I mean, there could be, perhaps Republicans will say, yes, the president's right, this is our one chance to do it, we're going to do it no matter what's in the bill, or I can live with it. Or they may dig in their heels, whether Freedom Caucus conservatives or more moderate Republicans, and say, we cannot live with this. If it's an upvote, what's it face in the Senate, Lisa? And if it's a downvote, a no, what does that mean for the administration?
Right. It's fascinating either way. There are major problems in the Senate where Republicans can lose no more than two votes. We already know that there are three strong no's in the Senate. That's Tom Cotton of Arkansas, Mike Lee of Utah, and Rand Paul of Kentucky. And there are probably another 10 who have major problems with this, including core leadership members like Bob Corker of Tennessee, who has real doubts about this. So the Senate is maybe even a bigger question mark, if that's possible to believe, than the House. There's also parliamentary questions when it hits the Senate that they say they've cleared, but we're not sure yet. One of the hopes for House Republicans is that in this final deal they put on the table last night, they offered conservatives something they wanted, which was to take the essential benefits package that Obamacare guarantees. That includes our preventative care,
yep,
maternity care, prescriptions,
emergency room, all that.
Conservatives wanted that to be out of the law, and Republicans said there were some procedural issues, reasons they couldn't, but in the end, they said, hey, we figured out how to do it. We will take that out. No longer will insurance companies under this bill be required to offer those benefits. Conservatives are very happy that that amendment is going through, but as I said earlier, some moderates are very unhappy about it because they think that that will be a serious coverage loss, and there are questions about whether that will fly in the Senate. So every time you tweak one direction, you kind of crumble in another direction. As for the administration, this is a real test of the Trump negotiating strategy. Will an ultimatum work? That's what they're counting on. The president has said if this vote fails today, he's walking away. No more will he talk about health care. He's trying to call conservatives bluff, but they may call his bluff. It's a very interesting game of chicken, and it's a real test of President Trump as a deal maker.
Jack, that's going to be something to campaign on in 2018. We stripped essential health benefits out of health care.
Yeah, that'll do it. Well, you
maybe
know,
it will. I don't know.
this issue has been radioactive. It cost the Democrats their majority. They lost, I think, 60 seats.
Yeah,
running on getting health care reform. Maybe health care deconstruction will be just as destructive to the party that does that.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at a week in the news this hour, and a big one. The Republicans and a health care battle royal on Capitol Hill. Trump and Russia and the House Intelligence Committee leaks and interference in the 2016 election there. An FBI investigation, we're told, is formally on. Gorsuch before the Senate, his confirmation hearings, the terror attack in London. Lisa Desjardins is with us, correspondent for the PBS NewsHour. Michael Graham is here, podcast editor for the Weekly Standard. Jack Beatty's here, and you can join us on healthcare, on the House Intelligence Committee hearings, on Trump, the Trump camp and Russia and the elections, on the chairman of that committee and his role and whether it should go forward. Let's go to New Orleans and Taylor. Taylor, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Nice to talk with you.
You too.
What I'm not understanding is the Republicans have been calling for health care reform now for longer than 3 weeks. So my question is very
more like simple. 7 years. It was the seventh anniversary of Obamacare's passage yesterday.
Exactly, more than 3 weeks. So why is it now chaos when trying to get reform together, when in essence they had 7 years to get something?
Michael, how do you answer that?
I answer number one because it's the Republican Party, and what's the line? You bring back the line from the 30s. I'm not the member of any organized political party. I'm a Republican. I think that was Will Rogers. And the other part is the, as I mentioned earlier, the strictures. If you were able to pass legislation where the House could just, you know, work it through without using reconciliation limits all sorts of things you can pull in.
And let's just define that. That's dealing within the sort of realm of numbers and spending
budget,
rather than full-on legislation. And they're doing that because they do not have the votes to pass it legislatively.
Obviously, and particularly on the Senate side. The Republicans' case is simply this. You unleash the free market and everybody's insurance gets cheaper and the quality of your care gets better. But they don't have the power to do the unleashing through the reconciliation window. And so they're trying to shove basically kind of clay through this and then counting on Health and Human Secretary Tom Price to use his power to move it along. And then this mysterious phase three at some point where there will be legislation. And that's the result, chaos.
Lisa, is there evidence out there that if you unleash the free market and it's tough to do, it'll be cheaper and it will be better?
You know, I think when I'm nervous about going down that road because one of the problems with this bill many critics have is that, as exactly we just heard, that it takes out some things and not others. So if conservatives want to lift all of Obamacare, that's one reason they don't like this bill, because it takes out some things and not others.
Yeah.
Like those essential benefits that we were just talking about, there are some Freedom Caucus members that I spoke to last night who have a really serious concern that if you lift those essential benefits but leave in place other requirements for insurers, you're going to make the market kind of so chaotic that you're forcing huge premium increases on some people and not others. And then, you know, we haven't even talked about the political problem here for Republicans. There are several, one of which is that the group most likely to see premium increases, and they will be large double-digit premium increases,
huge,
would be Americans 50 to 64. Those are largely Republican voters. Those are the voters that they count on year in, year out. But they will likely be harmed and harmed quickly by this bill in their healthcare wallet. So it is a very big risk for Republicans. They want to get to a more free market system, but because of the restrictions of reconciliation, which has to be part of the budget process, they can't fully repeal Obamacare without more votes in the Senate. They don't have them.
Cheaper depends on who you are, and not right away for anybody, the CBO said this week. Better? Huge questions over that. Again, depending who you are, what your circumstances are. Nedra's calling from New York. Lee Center, New York. Nedra, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
What I want to say is I hear everyone saying that they promised the American people that they would repeal and replace. But the one thing I'm not hearing is he also promised everyone would be covered.
So he being President Trump, candidate Trump, Nedra.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he promised to repeal and replace, but he also promised everyone would be covered. So isn't that the conundrum? That's why nothing can move. That's why we're having all this difficulty.
Well, I mean, the Congressional Budget Office, Jack, says an extra 24 million people will be without. That's a long way from Donald Trump painted a beautiful picture on the campaign trail. It's going to be fabulous. It's going to be great. It will do it fast, and it'll cover everybody, and it'll be gorgeous. That's hardly what the CBO described, Jack.
No. And, you know, it may be the beginning of a series of betrayals that will come to define Trumpism. The very people that voted for him, people in rural areas, are going to suffer most for this. Their premiums, as Lisa said, are going to go higher than anyone else's. For example, the difference between average credit for what they're paying now and what they'll be paying under this bill in Alaska, it's the difference of $10,000 a year. In North Carolina, $5,000. Nebraska, $4,000, et cetera, et cetera. All places that went for Trump, betrayed now by Mr. Trump. And, of course, will this continue with tax reform? Well, if it includes this border adjustment tax, which is going to increase the price of goods at Walmart, that's going to hurt the same people, too. And at a certain point, Mr. Trump has to wake up. He didn't run as a Paul Ryan Republican. He didn't run as someone who gets up every day and says, Ayn Rand, Milton Friedman, that's my... No, he ran as a populist.
Yeah.
He ran as a guy who was going to help the little guy, who was not afflict him, as it seems to be doing, at least in this health care plan, and the tax reform down the road looks bad in that regard, too.
Michael, the president tweeting today that this is a great plan, exclamation mark. Do you think he believes that?
Who knows what Donald Trump believes? I mean, what is Donald Trump's health care plan broadly? If we just set him loose, I don't know that you would have as Lisa pointed out, plan is everybody gets all the health care they want. Nobody pays for it. And a unicorn arrives to fly you to your medical appointment. I don't know what he believes. I do believe this, that he believes that this is not where his wheelhouse is. His wheelhouse is jobs, jobs, jobs. And you can make the case that Obamacare killed jobs, and I think it's indisputable that it did. By the way, it also left 30 million people uninsured as of 2016, so it has its
own
issues.
It didn't get everybody, but we're headed toward 54, 58 million or something under Trump care, I guess the CBO says. But anyway,
Because people will choose not to buy overpriced policies that they don't want. But I don't want to get sidetracked.
When it costs you so much, it's hard to choose otherwise. Anyway, your point?
My point is that he wants to talk about jobs. He wants to get on this tax issue. The rising tide lifts all boats argument, which is the Ryan argument for the economy, is a lot easier for people to see and feel. If everybody's getting paycheck bonuses, if they're finding better jobs, they're not going to worry about where the marginal rates fall. And that's a much better place for Trump to play. And that's where he's trying to get to. He's trying to get over there. And for whatever reason, he thinks he's got to get through Obamacare to get there.
If he doesn't bring this home, Lisa, and again, we don't know. Today, maybe the president's negotiating pattern will work for him. But if he doesn't bring it home, what about the rest of his agenda? Can he just move on and say, oops, let's go to tax reform, it'll be fine?
Even if he does bring it home, the rest of his agenda has sort of got a pretty steep slope as well. But absolutely, if this vote fails, and if in fact the president does walk away from health care, it will dramatically change the dynamic in Washington. Next up for them, as Michael was saying, is tax reform. And for a lot of Republicans, that's been the dream, including one Republican named Paul Ryan. His dream job, he's such a geek, was to be the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, so he could do tax reform. Now he's the House Speaker. He's one issue away from getting to it, but he may not get there because of the problems that the Republicans are having in figuring out this health care vote. And one note, I'm very cautiously want to clarify something Michael said.
Yep.
While those CBO numbers do include, I think, 10 or 11 million Americans who would be out of insurance under this plan by their own choice, it's really important to recognize that. There are people who would choose to not have insurance because there would not be a penalty. I think at least half or more than half of those going out with insurance under CBO's forecast would not be by choice, but
right.
With Medicaid and other things. So there's equal parts there.
And of course, choice becomes a funky thing. If it gets very expensive for some people, you call that a choice? Maybe it is. Incredible, and action still unfolding on that as we speak. You may know more than we by the time you hear this. I've got to turn to another front, this whole gnarly business of Russian interference in the 2016 campaign. U.S. Intelligence Community has said, the FBI director this week confirming before the House Intelligence Committee that he is not only investigating that, but he's investigating potential collusion of Trump associates with the Russians. It got pretty wild, and it got wilder over the balance of the week. In Monday's hearing, here was Connecticut Democrat Congressman Jim Himes pressing the FBI director, James Comey, for details of the FBI's investigation into Trump's aides.
The people around the president, Michael Flynn, Jeff Sessions, Carter Page, Paul Manafort, have an odd connection to Russia, a series of odd connections. We all campaign. I don't think any of our campaign people have connections with a foreign power, much less one that is an adversary of the United States. And further, apart from these weird links, without exception, the individuals I quoted have dissembled or misled, maybe even lied about the nature of those connections until the political pressure has gotten to a point where they have been fired or recused in the case of the Attorney General.
Those connections, big questions, Democrats up in arms, Republicans up in arms, but about something that seemed quite different. Up in arms about the leaks that brought so much of this to public attention. Here was the committee chairman, Republican Devin Nunes. He made more news this week. But starting in the hearings, all about the leaks, the leaks.
We aim to determine who has leaked or facilitated leaks of classified information so that these individuals can be brought to justice.
Okay, here we are. Jack, I mean, this story unfolded all week long. By week's end, we know that Nunes was briefing President Trump on some vague insights into how Trump camp members may have been, he said, incidentally surveilled in the intelligence community's process of other intelligence gathering. The president glomming onto that as kind of justification for his tweet several weeks ago now, saying that Obama tapped him at Trump Tower. But others coming back and saying that that is nonsense. Here we are at week's end. I'm looking at the Washington Post editorializing, shut down Nunes' investigation, investigate him for leaking. The New York Times, Representative Nunes is a lapdog in a watchdog role. Where's this investigation gone? Where's it going, Jack? Hello, Jack. Are you there, my friend? Lisa, I've got to put that to you, I guess. Jack's line may have dropped.
No, I was in the House Intelligence Committee room, and I've been speaking to Chairman Nunes all week. I think that these are very serious questions about the House Intelligence Chairman, and I honestly think these questions go back before he kind of raised this issue with the president. We have to remember, Chairman Nunes was on the Trump transition team, and that doesn't automatically disqualify him, but that's a fair point, that he's someone who has been a Trump ally, a very close ally, and I think this week, now, Democrats and even some of his Republicans are furious that they believe his alliance is more with the White House than with Congress. At one point, Chairman Nunes said to me, we were talking in the hallway, he said, I feel it's my responsibility to have told the president these things. Well, that was a fascinating statement for someone who's covered Congress so long. I've never heard a member of Congress say that they have a responsibility to the president. They may have a loyalty to the president, loyalty to this country, but generally the separation of branches is such that you don't hear members of Congress saying that they work for or have a responsibility to the president. From his perspective, obviously there's something that propelled him this direction, but it's a mystery. We don't have details, and neither do other top intelligence officials in Congress.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Here's Nunes. This was on Wednesday, a couple days after the hearing, telling reporters of President-elect Trump's transition team. Members of it were part of surveillance collected after the election, criticized the circulation of that information. Big storm afterward, but here he was.
I recently confirmed that on numerous occasions, the intelligence community incidentally collected information about U.S. citizens involved in the Trump transition. Details about U.S. persons associated with the incoming administration, details with little or no apparent foreign intelligence value, were widely disseminated in intelligence community reporting.
The president loved that. A reporter asked him if he felt vindicated by what the chairman had said.
I somewhat do. I must tell you, I somewhat do. I very much appreciated the fact that they found what they found, but I somewhat do.
But you got Democrats on the committee and some Republicans highly critical as well. Here's the minority ranking member, Adam Schiff, out of California, saying, come on, the chairman cannot play this kind of role. He's got to decide what we're up to here in investigating this.
The chairman will need to decide whether he is the chairman of an independent investigation into conduct, which includes allegations of potential coordination between the Trump campaign and the Russians, or he is going to act as a surrogate of the White House. Because he cannot do both. And unfortunately, I think the actions of today throw great doubt into the ability of both the chairman and the committee to conduct the investigation the way it ought to be conducted.
Michael Graham, you've got the Washington Post editorializing today. It is time to discuss the formation of an independent, nonpartisan commission with full subpoena power, like those that investigated the attacks of 9/11, the intelligence failures in Iraq. In the meantime, they write, House leaders should put an end to the embarrassing travesty being directed by Mr. Nunes. What about him briefing the president before he's briefing other members of the committee that's supposed to be investigating the president, Michael?
I agree. It's absolutely bizarre. But then again, it's absolutely bizarre that we are this far down this road without either side having definitive evidence of astonishing claims. Claim one, that the people around Donald Trump were colluding, working with the Russians to somehow make something happen in the campaign. The claim that on his way out the door, the president of the United States and his administration pushed raw intelligence out to create the opportunity for leaks. But can I take 1 second to put the whole Trump-Russia thing in context? This is how it looks from the right side of the aisle. Democrats were given one simple job. All you had to do was beat Donald Trump. Really? You couldn't do that? And so now with some secret collusion for the, who cares if Vladimir Putin came over and campaigned for Trump in all 50 states? All Hillary had to do was beat Donald Trump. And that's why there's a veneer of sour grapes over all of that conversation that causes a lot of people who are either pro-Trump or, on the fence about Trump to kind of shrug and go, really? That's what this is about.
I mean, you say who cares, and I get it, but I got to say in return, I care, and I care for this reason. If the president of the United States is indebted to Moscow in some way that was, and at this point it would have to have been concealed in some way, that's a pretty weird dynamic. Isn't that odd if Moscow has leverage over our president because it's too embarrassing or illegal to fully put on the table. Surely, around the election of a president, we need transparency when it comes to foreign intervention. I get it on the Hillary Clinton loss side. Big embarrassment for Democrats, but isn't it more than embarrassing for Republicans?
If Moscow helped
their guy win?
If there is evidence that Team Trump colluded directly with the Russians, that's crippling. That's possibly ending of the administration. Looking for evidence, and on both sides, there has been a lot of if, maybe, we think, but yep. No facts. The facts are going to determine this in the end.
Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, it's important to work with someone you can trust who has your best interests in mind. With Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence you need to make an informed decision. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
Hi, it's Tom. Thanks for listening to this On Point podcast. I want you to take a moment to think about the people you care about. Have they ever listened to a podcast? All this month, we're asking our listeners to tell a friend about a podcast they love. This one, another one, do it in real life or on social media. And if they don't know how to download them, give them a quick lesson. You'll be opening up a new world for them. Tell us what you're recommending with the hashtag TryPod. That's hashtag TryPod. And thanks. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. In other news this week, a new face on Sesame Street, Julia, a puppet with autism. Julia's puppeteer, Stacey Gordon, has a son with autism. Gordon performed and talked with CBS 60 Minutes' Leslie Stahl about why depicting Julia and her autism is important.
I know that song, Julia.
Having Julia on the show and seeing all of the characters treat her with compassion.
And like her.
And like her. It's huge.
Last night, host James Corden poked fun at Ivanka Trump's new role in The West Wing.
The administration has said that Ivanka is going to act as her father's, quote, eyes and ears. Yeah. Which basically means she's going to be walking around the White House going, right, that's it, I'm telling my dad.
And legendary father of rock and roll, Chuck Berry, died Saturday at 90. Here he is with one of the most recognizable guitar licks in history on Johnny B. Goode. We are looking at a week in the news, Republicans and health care, Trump and Russia and House intelligence, Judge Gorsuch before the Senate, the terror attack in London. Michael Graham is with us from the Weekly Standard, Lisa Desjardins from the PBS NewsHour, Jack Beatty's here, and you can join us. What are you thinking on Trump and Russia at the end of this week? What's your verdict on Judge Gorsuch? Should he ascend to the Supreme Court? Should the Democrats filibuster? Chuck Schumer says they will. What's your reaction to the attack in London? And how do you feel about Ivanka Trump moving into the West Wing, getting top security clearance? Okay, what about the Trump administration saying it will greenlight, has greenlighted, as far as the president can, the Keystone Pipeline? Should say we've got Paul Manafort, former chairman of the Trump campaign, saying he will be questioned by the House Intelligence Committee, according to the Chairman Nunes there. And Chairman Nunes may be trying to hang on to his role, his seat there, saying today there was no wiretapping of Trump Tower. That didn't happen, talking this morning. But there have been plenty of calls out there now for something beyond the House Intelligence Committee to look into this. This was Arizona Republican Senator John McCain on Wednesday telling MSNBC he wants an independent commission to investigate President Trump's ties to Russia.
The reason why I'm calling for this select committee or a special committee is I think that this back and forth and what the American people have found out so far, that no longer does the Congress have credibility to handle this alone. And I don't say that lightly.
And he doesn't say that lightly. We could be in for a long slog here. Kathy in Greenville, South Carolina. Kathy, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just have an observation that the reason they're trying to shove this horrible health care bill through and Gorsuch's nomination is because once more information comes out about the Trump team's collusion with Russia, he will have no political power to get anything through.
I appreciate your call, Kathy. Michael Graham, you know, in years past, that would have been true. The Republicans seem to have developed a remarkable elasticity these days around this.
Well, first thing I have to say to a phone call from Greenville, South Carolina, is go Cox. The Gamecocks are going to win tonight. The NCAA,
all right.
Keep their amazing.
The madness rolls.
Sindarius Thornwell is going to get him past Butler. So, but if you had told me that the number one group of people who would support Donald Trump in 2016 were going to be evangelical Christians, even after the TV, I would have said, wow, you've got to be kidding. How, you know, what is this new world we're in? And I thought Jack made a brilliant point about Trump being a populist versus a Republican. He's the wild card that changes all the math in all of these equations.
But are Republicans, will they continue to line up with him there's all this sort of, I don't know what's going to come out. I don't know what part is going to come out, but there's so much bubbling around here, Michael. If it's really on his hook, you know, some real collusion with Moscow, do Russians stand up and say, no biggie? I mean, do Republicans?
Oh, no.
Republicans.
No. You have evidence of collusion. That's a totally different world. But once again, just like if there's evidence that the Obama administration on the way out the door was shoving raw intelligence into every place they could find, if the pattern that they developed when they were using the IRS to go after their political opponents, or in 2015 when they were caught and had to admit that they were spying on the Israelis while they were here, caught information about congressmen who were talking to the Israelis, and then that information mysteriously ended up in the White House, if that pattern shows up, that's an issue too. Two, I'm looking for facts. Lots of ugly suggestions, not a lot of facts.
Jamie in Nashville, Tennessee. Jamie, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
How are you?
Good, good.
Thank you so much for taking my call. I have been waiting a long time for this opportunity. Years ago, I was on your show when Arianna Huffington was on.
Oh, now she's trying to save Uber. Good luck to her. What are you thinking today, Jamie?
Yeah, real big time good luck to her. The topic that day was, is the United States becoming a third world country? And I think with the election of Donald Trump that we have unequivocally answered that question. We haven't elected a president. We have installed a dictator. We've put a man in office who... it's my way or no way. We put a man in who's sitting in the chair that once said to Mikhail Gorbachev, please tear down this wall, or Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Sitting in Reagan's chair.
Reagan's chair. Now we have a man who wants to put up a wall. He's trying to push through a flawed health care deal. And I speak from experience with my father going through the revisions that they did to the pharmaceutical bill.
But Jamie, a dictator, you're saying a dictator, but when you call somebody a dictator, it suggests they've got a lot of power. I mean, is it clear yet that President Trump is exercising a lot of power? You know, his travel ban is held up in the courts. His first big legislative push here on health care, I don't know what's going to happen with that. Is it so clear that he's wielding, you know, mucho power?
Well, what do you call a man that installs loyalty officers or monitors or whatever they are?
In his different departments,
Not just Ivanka, in the different departments that will be keeping an eye, making sure that they follow. And I apologize for the hoarseness of my throat.
That's all right. Jamie, we got it. You put a big signpost up there. Jack Beatty, what about the actual exercise of power so far by this president? He's a dramatic man. He's a theatrical man. Is he a powerful president at this point?
No. Doug Brinkley, the presidential historian, said this week that this is the most fail first 100 days of any president he could remember. Charles Krauthammer has a column this morning listing some of the things you just did, Tom, the countervailing forces. The courts, the Congress is not cooperating with him, and the press, which he sees as public enemy, you know, enemy of the people, is certainly not cooperating with him, and the government, the leakers aren't cooperating with him. Where'er he looks,
checks, he's checked and balanced, it seems to me, at least at this point. His inclinations may be authoritarian, but the system, at least at this point, seems to be working pretty well. And it has another ally, the incompetence of this administration. You know, if he were competent, perhaps we would have, there'd be more threats. But the way they have done things, from the rollout of the, you know, the ban, the travel ban, to the handling of this health care, they are not competent.
I want to go to Marty in Jamestown, Pennsylvania. Marty, you're on. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just have a question. I'm not sure. Maybe it's a comment. But as long as this investigation on Russia interference is going on, and we do need a special independent counsel to do that, why is anything being done in Washington? Shouldn't we just be doing the day-to-day things and not passing anything that Trump puts forward, including seating a Supreme Court justice, until this investigation is finished and we find out how much corruption is there and who's guilty and who's not guilty?
Well, you've certainly got Democrats out there saying that, and you do have this weird situation where if evidence would emerge and it was disputed and it went to the Supreme Court and there was a Justice Neil Gorsuch there, he would be, what, casting a vote on the guy who put him in the Supreme Court justice robe. And that has been raised in a very big way, but so far no traction on that. Mitch McConnell looking to shepherd this through the Senate. We had those hearings this week. Jamie, let us look at that. I mean, the sort of memorable moment out of those hearings, maybe there were many, but the frozen trucker story got so much attention about this case that Judge Gorsuch had ruled on, where the guy, his truck was broken down at the side of the road. He was freezing and he finally left it. He got fired. Gorsuch was in the minority, saying that the company was justified in doing that. Here was Democratic Senator Al Franken, Minnesota.
It is absurd to say this company is in its rights to fire him because he made the choice of possibly dying from freezing to death or causing other people to die, possibly by driving an unsafe vehicle. That's absurd.
But Judge Gorsuch say, hey, not fair to take this one case out of all the cases I've ruled on. Here he was.
I know a case or two has been mentioned yesterday. Respectfully, I'd suggest that does not represent the body of my work. I've written 2,700, I participated in 2,700 opinions over 10 and a half years. And if you want cases where I've ruled for the little guy as well as the big guy, there are plenty of them, Senator.
Plenty of those cases as well. Democrats not buying it. They're taking a lot of heat from their base, the left. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer on Thursday saying plans to filibuster the nomination of Judge Neil Gorsuch for the U.S. Supreme Court.
His nomination will have a cloture vote. He will have to earn 60 votes for confirmation. My vote will be no, and I urge my colleagues to do the same.
Lisa Desjardins, what do you see coming on the Gorsuch front?
Well, I think the Democrats feel emboldened this week, and a lot of that has to do with health care, and I think that has helped motivate Senator Schumer to go ahead and push for this filibuster and potentially try and take down Judge Gorsuch. The Republicans need 8 Democratic votes. That's very possible. You know, I was at those hearings. I was at one of those hearings, and it was a fascinating lesson in contrast of two giant storylines. On the House side, we had almost a Wagnerian opera, incredible drama, lightning and thunder. And then here we had something of equal importance, I think, which was more like a Brahms string quartet with Neil Gorsuch facing off with Amy Klobuchar over a game of nice. It was almost who could be nicer in answering these difficult questions. There were a few moments of tension, but through it all, Judge Gorsuch, I think, did very well, and I don't think anyone is questioning that. So it is an issue of these moderate Democrats and their calculation. Is it better for them to vote against Judge Gorsuch? Perhaps that will alienate some of their constituents, or for him. They're concerned, I think, down the road, does he end up, you know, voting against Roe versus Wade? Does a vote for him haunt them down the road later? But, you know, I think it's very possible he's still confirmed, even with the filibuster.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. But doesn't Mitch McConnell just pull the plug on the filibuster option? Don't Republicans just come in and change the rules and say, we don't need 60 votes here?
Right. I think to that, it is the last thing Mitch McConnell wants to do. He is a man, a historian of the Senate, one of the best historians of the Senate living, and he loves the institution. He is someone who believes in the filibuster. He will do it if he has to, but I know he's hoping not to.
Well, Jack, what are you thinking on Gorsuch at the end of the week?
Well, you know, something emerged in that hearing that caught my ear. The economic populism that was really empty from the Clinton campaign in the fall. I mean, it was Mr. Trump who ran on those mm-hmm. issues. I could hear it in the background. Yes, there were questions about abortion and precedent and so on, and there have to be. But from people like Sheldon Whitehouse, who talked about the way the Roberts Court is lining up to help corporations against humans, pointing out that the court has ruled for the Chamber of Commerce 69% of the time, to Dick Durbin picking up on the frozen trucker case, saying to Judge Gorsuch, you know, it was 14 below that night, but it wasn't as cold as your dissent, Judge Gorsuch. The little guy was coming into his own in that Democratic questioning, and I really sensed that they were finding their feet not just in opposing Trump, but in maybe finding an economic issue to stand with the people who Mr. Trump stood with in the campaign, the forgotten Americans. And there was a real appeal to them and saying, this guy, Judge Gorsuch, qualified as he is going to be a big business shill on the Supreme Court.
Nomination presented is kind of a slam dunk. We shall see. One more call here. Carla in Kent, Ohio. Carla, thank you very much for calling. You're on.
Hi, Tom. Here's something that's been playing on my mind regarding this country becoming like a third world country. What about Ivanka Trump going to get security clearance to be a privy to classified information when she has been in Azerbaijan overseeing the building of the Trump Tower there and hobnobbing with a lot of really shady characters? Isn't this a little bizarre that Trump has his son-in-law and his daughter getting a security clearance? It worries me.
And Ivanka getting an office in the West Wing. How do you look at that, Michael Graham?
It worked for the Kennedys. Maybe it'll work for the Trumps. I don't know. The American people knew that Donald Trump had a lot of international interests and businesses around the world. They knew about his, you know, large financial holdings. They knew there were going to be messes like this. And when given the choice between Donald Trump's messes or Hillary Clinton's messes, they, for some reason, chose Trump's.
But do you think they knew that he would that those messes would still be so close to the president once he got in office that his family would sort of move in with him? Not his wife, but his son-in-law and daughter?
I don't think anyone's surprised. I mean, Jared Kushner's been a key player for the whole campaign.
True.
This is none of this, you know, Ivanka Trump's role.
Yeah.
This is not new. This has been the Trump storyline from the beginning. Largely, we are seeing H.L. Mencken's theory at work. Democracy's a theory that the common man knows what he wants and deserves to get it good and hard.
Here we go. Lisa Desjardins, a president unconstrained by precedent, or is Bobby Kennedy as attorney general enough precedent to bring in the whole Trump claim?
Yeah, I don't think ideology or history are constraining this president. Just to put it bluntly, I think he forges his own path, and I think what's going to be interesting is to see how he reacts when he has his first big loss. We don't know if it will be with health care or with something else, but every president has them, and it'll be interesting to see how he changes strategy or if he changes strategy.
Wow. Not constrained by ideology, not constrained by history. H.L. Mencken's dictate having the day, and here we are. Lisa Desjardins with PBS NewsHour. Lisa, a special thanks to you for being with us today. I really appreciate it. Thanks so much for coming on.
Oh, thank you for asking. My pleasure.
And Michael Graham, podcast editor for the Weekly Standard. Michael, great to have you come again. Thanks for joining us.
Anytime.
Jack Beattie, thank you, sir. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Americans, good luck to you. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.